dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I am often inclined to turn to an intelligence professional to provide such a briefing, and we're going to do that today. He is my colleague and friend at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights. But before joining us, he served with great distinction in the Central Intelligence Agency for about 20 years as the Chief of Staff to Ambassador John Bolton at the State Department and as a professional staff member on the House Intelligence Committee. He is the author of Obama Bomb, A Dangerous and Growing National Security Fraud. Fred Flights, welcome back. It's so good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
I want to start with the latest on Iran. Fred, as I mentioned, you've written an important book chronicling the dangerous defects, the fraudulent nature of this deal. The State Department issued a statement earlier this week in which they asserted that, in fact, the Iranians are complying with the deal. That gave rise to a speech, a press statement, I guess I should say it, the department yesterday by the Secretary of State, which seemed to suggest that actually not so fast, everything's under review, including the deal itself and Iranian compliance therewith. Work us through this, if you would.
Well, I published an article that appeared on FoxNews.com on April 19th entitled "Team Trump and Iran, Obama and the Swamp Have Just Scored a Huge Win." Here's what happened, in my opinion. Earlier this week, the State Department issued a report that said Iran is in full compliance with the nuclear deal with Iran. And I explained in my article that just isn't true. It isn't true. Iran isn't allowing access to military facilities, which they're supposed to. It's exceeded caps on producing enriched uranium and heavy water. These are violations of the agreement that we know of. The next day, Rex Tillerson makes a statement saying, well, this is a bad deal, and Iran is a state sponsor of terror and is still en route to get a nuclear weapon long term. First of all, this deal is a fraud. So why do we care if Iran is in compliance? And as the Israelis said, they can make nuclear weapons even if they comply with the agreement, but they're not complying. We now know that there is a review of this policy. And Rex Tillerson said, hey, don't worry about this. There's a review of the policy. We know Iran is a state sponsor of terror. If we certified Iran is in compliance with this agreement, we are on the road to keeping the agreement. Let's just be clear about that. And I think that the problem is that this government is stacked with people held over from the Obama administration. This review is going to come out just like the review of the Clinton North Korea nuclear policy, which everybody hated. 60 days is going to go by, and this administration, I'm afraid, is going to keep this agreement unless there is a substantial change in policy.
In policy and in policymakers, I think, is what you're getting at, Fred Flights, and I couldn't agree with you more. Speaking of North Korea, Fred, you've been doing incredibly important work trying to help track what's actually going on there, including their continuing and it seems increasingly aggressive ballistic missile tests and possibly even preparations for more underground nuclear tests. Give us your latest view on what's happening in that front.
Well, I wrote a piece on National Review earlier this week to try to focus on something no one's thinking about, and that is the real risk right now from North Korea's nuclear program is not a nuke fired at the United States with an ICBM. That's many years off. It's North Korea testing advanced missile and nuclear technology with a real possibility of catastrophic mistakes with, let's say, a missile landing on another country or radiation being released from underground nuclear tests. And what I'm saying in this article is that the United States has to make it very clear to the Chinese, North Korea's nuclear program is a bigger threat to you right now because of radiation that could be released through something called a containment failure as these tests get larger and larger. I think that's the key to getting China to stop fooling around and to really pressure the North Koreans, because they're looking at the prospect down the road of a radioactive cloud going over China. And I think that's something, and I'm making this clear to experts, to the news media, to the Trump administration. You got to press China to say, this is a threat to you right now, not to us, and you have to help us.
Fred Plaitz, one of the things that I've been convinced of for some time is that the Chinese actually find the bad behavior of North Korea to be valuable to them, that it has proven to be a basis upon which they've extracted concessions in their own right, and also, of course, that they've been able to secure concessions for their proxies, their clients in North Korea, who are desperately short of everything from food to fuel, as you know. Let me ask you about this Chinese cooperation. I get the point that if they themselves are going to be perhaps harmed by a radioactive leak from a nuclear test, for example, that should change somewhat the calculation here. But how seriously is their policy influenced by this larger strategic purpose that, in a way, encourages the North Koreans to be, the worse the better, as it were?
I think that's the problem. I mean, it has served China's interests for North Korea to be stirring up trouble. It serves China's interests for North Korea to be where it is, for the peninsula not to be unified. And we know that there has been assistance to the North Korean nuclear missile programs of China. These trucks called TELs that transport North Korean missiles, we know some of them have come from China. And that's where I say that China has been fooling around, trying to play this game to advance its interests. And I think the Trump administration has to make the case North Korea's nuclear and missile programs are becoming too dangerous for this nonsense to continue. China has to help us right now.
Another piece of this, of course, is the collusion between North Korea and Iran and the degree to which those underground nuclear tests are helping the Iranians advance their program, which, again, is not supposed to be going forward under this deal, and presumably also benefiting from advances in missile technology that the North Koreans, despite some setbacks, are beavering away at. Fred Plaitz, you know, I was struck this morning, the National Public Radio program, Morning Edition, featured prominently a fellow by the name of Trita Parsi, singing the praises of this deal with Iran and sort of taking to task the administration for possibly contemplating doing away with it. Remind us quickly, if you would, about who Trita Parsi is and why it is a dubious source for any analysis of this deal.
Parsi is president of the National Iranian Americans Council, which frankly is the chief Iranian lobbying group in the United States. I debated this guy, and he is just a complete apologist for Iran. And frankly, he doesn't even understand the Iran deal. All he does is throw out platitudes and make these statements that unless we pursue this deal, there's going to be war. He tried to argue with me that, well, there's really no reason for Iran to stop its missile program because there's no treaty banning missiles. And I corrected him, saying, well, there is a treaty. The missile technology control regime, which Iran refuses to sign. This man is in the tank with Iran. He's frequently in news media interviews trying to promote this deal as if he's an objective observer, and he just isn't.
And not only that, but as I understand it, he was given considerable access to and influence with the team that was negotiating the deal for the United States.
Again, that's right.
Iran lobbyist, if you will, this is a very dubious arrangement and perhaps contributed materially to how defective the deal is. Fred Plaitz, thank you so much for the great work you do on all of these issues, particularly the accountability that you are extracting with respect to bad understandings, bad agreements, bad deals, bad compliance with them on the part of very serious adversaries like the Iranians and the North Koreans. At National Review and Fox News, Newsmax, and of course in the platforms of the Center for Security Policy, including this one. Come back to us again next week. And thanks in the meantime again for your great work. Next up, we'll speak with Diana West. We'll drill down on the latest on the so-called Russian influence operations against the U.S. election. Diana West, that and more, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's time for our weekly visit with one of my dear friends and most admired colleagues, Diana West. She is, of course, a longtime syndicated columnist. You can find her writings these days most easily at dianawest.net. Very pleased that one of her very important best-selling books, American Betrayal, was plugged on the Hannity show the other day by former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He talked about American Betrayal, the secret assault on our nation's character. He could have said the same, frankly, about the other, The Death of the Grown-Up, how America's arrested development is bringing down Western civilization. Diana West, congratulations on that plug, by the way, but welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, that was a highlight to hear Speaker Gingrich discuss the book. And I think the reason he's still thinking about it, because the book is almost 4 years old, I think the reason he's thinking about it is that a lot of what we're going through right now is discussed and essentially mapped out in American Betrayal in terms of fake news, in terms of fake history, in terms of manipulation of the American people. And these are kind of the running themes that we continue to be harmed by.
Diana West, your book describes Russian influence operations in the distant past, perhaps, but some that are very relevant to what's going on or allegedly going on at the moment. Give me your current reading on what we know about what they were trying to do during the last U.S. presidential campaign, and whether we've been misled about that.
Well, I think that it behooves to our being misled about Russian influence on the last campaign is right there in front of our eyes in the way that the media and the politicians are targeting the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, Trump transition only. In this way, the entire issue becomes a political hammer aimed at President Trump. If we were actually to look at the entire gamut of Russian influence operations, as we should, as I hope we do still to this day, we would have to open it up and, of course, look at the other party, the Democratic Party, the Obama administration, the Hillary Clinton campaign. The fact that we are not at this point doing so continues to blight any kind of investigation as a political operation.
Yeah. Our guest is Diana West. I'm very pleased to say we have the privilege of talking with her about this time each week. And Diana, you were just making a very important point about how Russian influence operations may be in the service at the moment of domestic political operatives rather than something that is separate from them.
Yes, and I think that the culprit at this point is really not the Democratic Party, because they're, of course, not in control of the Congress. The culprit at this point in the sense of not opening up these investigations to be nonpartisan, to look at both political parties and their susceptibility and cooperation, collusion, etc., investigate these things, investigate Russian influence on these matters, is the Republican Party. The Republican Party, at least, knows about Skolkovo, for example, which you and I have discussed for some time. To date, I believe the only Republican or the only legislator, but certainly in the Republican Party, to bring it up in the Congress is Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, and I commend him for it. And he made a very great point in his very brief presentation, according to his time, that the Skolkovo project in itself is a Russian influence operation that affected a transfer of all kinds of highly precious technology, including military technology, to Vladimir Putin's government that have actually resulted in gains in the military field that you and I have discussed in the sense of hypersonic technology. This must be opened up, and so long as it is not, again, we can understand the tea leaves as being a political operation. But the culprit at this point becomes the Republicans. And that's where it becomes very disturbing, and you see the cleavage between the Congress and the White House. And I fault the White House, too, for not doing any kind of a job in terms of getting the word out. I mean, they have the megaphone, they have the news team, the press corps there, and they are also at fault for not opening this up and shining the light of day on it. It's incredibly important, and everybody at this point is at fault in keeping the story from the American people.
And getting to the facts, and one of the people that I hope will be testifying before the Congress to do just that, Diana West, as these investigations proceed, will be you. But it does require the decisions of the chairman of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, or whoever's going to be conducting the investigations for the House Intelligence Committee, because the chairman has temporarily at least recused himself. Diana, let me ask you quickly about John Brennan. This is a very colorful character. I'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about his background. He seems to be a man who played a very important and very controversial role in this Russian tale, as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency under Barack Obama. Who is he, and what was he up to, as best we can tell at the moment?
Well, the highlights of John Brennan in the short term of this segment have to include the fact that he voted for the Communist Party ticket in 1976 as a college student. It also has to include the allegations made by former FBI Special Agent John Guandolo, a colleague of ours, that indeed, according to John Guandolo's sources, he converted to Islam as well. It also has to include what we know of his role in the 2008 campaign, whereby in the course of that campaign, the passport office at the State Department was breached, and one of the people involved worked for John Brennan's security company at the time. This is a story that never got the attention it should, because one of the key witnesses to this breach of the, and I should mention, the passport office, the passports of Barack Obama, also John McCain and Hillary Clinton were breached. This never got the attention, even after one of the key witnesses in this case was murdered. He died in a drive-by. His name was Quarles. He died in a drive-by shooting or some kind of shooting, one bullet to the head, which also sounds like an execution to me, on the streets of Washington before he could testify. This was an amazing case. The point at that time could have been, and there were stories to that effect, that the travels and the passport under which Barack Obama traveled were changed, breached, looked at, bleached, whatever. We don't know. The report that was finally released was so redacted, you could not make sense of it. So this is where John Brennan comes from. The story now is that perhaps he was trying to remain at the CIA under a Hillary Clinton administration and was doing everything he could to damage Donald Trump. And the latest allegations coming via The Guardian and now in the American Spectator discussion that he was using foreign intelligence agencies to help him in this case. Estonia has been named. This is a huge scandal, but John Brennan himself is a huge scandal that has never, ever been fully understood or dealt with.
Diana, there's so much more to talk about. We are hard out of time for doing so at the moment, though, and I want to thank you, as always, for the great work you are doing at dianawest.net. Please, folks, if you haven't already done so, follow up on Newt Gingrich's strong endorsement of what he called Diana West's brilliant book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You will understand more about the kind of challenges we're facing from Russia and most especially what we need to understand in terms of their influence operation, then probably all of the intelligence and leaks and investigative activities that have been undertaken to date. So, Diana, again, congratulations on all this important work. Keep it up and come back to us again next week. Next up, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mark Schneider, one of the country's most brilliant analysts of the nuclear threats we're facing and what we best do about them, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a privilege to say that we have in the house, at least virtually, Dr. Mark Schneider. He is a man that I have come to admire and respect. He worked for many years at senior levels of the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He was also a Foreign Service officer in the State Department and a member of its policy planning staff. These days, he is a senior analyst with the National Institute for Public Policy. And a very welcome guest. Always a pleasure to have him. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That's a very kind introduction.
Well, I want to talk with you about a couple of developments that are not news to you, perhaps, Mark Schneider, but are probably being brought to the attention of a lot of Americans in ways that that are new and unsettling. Let me ask you first and foremost about reports of a new Arctic base that the Russians are building and the implications that that might have, both for threats perhaps to this country, the ability to project power in the Arctic, and not least access to control of even the resources under the Arctic ice cap.
Well, there's really nothing new in this. They have for many years now been engaged in a large-scale effort to build up their military capability in the Arctic area. They've recently given a lot of publicity to a new base that they've just brought into operational status. The objective here is to intimidate Russia's neighbors. There are six nations, including the United States, that have claims, mineral claims to underwater resources in the Arctic area. Russia's claims are outrageous. They claim most of the Arctic, and they are building up military power with the hope that this will intimidate their neighbors from pursuing their own legal rights in that area.
Yeah, and just to give people a sense of what's at stake, I've heard by some estimates as much as $25 trillion worth of oil and gas and other minerals under the Arctic. It's almost unimaginable. But Mark, you've also been monitoring closely the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Back in the day when I was in the Pentagon, you and I worked together on that agreement and expressed concerns, I think, about the likelihood that the Soviet Union, now the Russians, would not comply. You've been making book on their compliance. Tell us what your current reading is on what's happening there.
Well, we face a complete crisis of compliance with this treaty. It's not a violation of a provision here or there. It's the entire treaty. They've been developing for many years a prohibited ground-launched cruise missile. They've now deployed it. This has been confirmed by the United States government. The Obama administration, when it announced prohibited testing in 2014, talked about sanctions, including military sanctions against the Russians, but in the end did absolutely nothing and left office without even telling the American people that this had happened. This is a very, very serious development. It's a threat to the United States and our allies, both in Europe and Asia. It's part of a larger nuclear buildup that's underway in Russia, which their defense minister in January characterized as literally massive. And he's right. And this is one very important aspect of that buildup and something they're going to try to use for intimidation purposes.
Yeah. And the importance of this, of course, is that the Russian buildup with respect to nuclear forces in both Asia and pointed westward towards towards Europe is precisely what the INF Treaty, as it was called, was designed to eliminate. A whole class of nuclear weapons, as was said at the time. Very troubling indeed. And is there any evidence, Mark Schneider, thus far, that the Trump administration is going to take a more robust stance with respect to these violations of the treaty?
Well, it's too early to say for sure, but some of things that have happened are fairly encouraging. The administration, including President Trump, voiced very strong concern over these developments, and they've just begun a nuclear posture review. It'll take probably almost 6 to 8 months to complete, and I encourage them to take their time because this is too important to rush through, and they need to get their team in place before they make any serious decisions. But this thing is certainly a major element that has to be addressed in the nuclear posture review. One thing I'd like to add on the INF violation, it's not a single violation, it's a whole series of violations. Russian state media, including official news agencies, are literally reporting two other Russian ground launch cruise missiles that have ranges that are prohibited under the INF treaty. So this is a major, major set of Russian actions that are just trashing this treaty.
Yeah. It raises a question, Mark Schneider, as to whether there will be other treaties with which they do not comply. In fact, you've, in your distinguished career, documented a history of noncompliance by the Soviets, by the Russians now, with, I think, every one of their agreements. You've previously warned that they may be positioning themselves to break out of this so-called New START treaty that the Obama administration negotiated. Mark, what's your current assessment of where that's headed?
I believe that the odds are very high Russia will not be in compliance with the treaty in February 2018 when the legal limits go into effect. The last set of numbers that were released on April 1st, this is less than a year before the deadline for the reductions, show that they moved from below the limit on deployed warheads on the day the treaty went into effect in 2011 to 215 warheads above it. And they have announced programs that are going to push that up. I can't tell you for sure whether it's going to be an open violation or a covert violation. They could go either way on that. The New START verification regime is just terrible. They may well depend on that to cover them and just come in with a bunch of phony numbers when the limits come into legal effect. Alternatively, they may suspend their obligations like they did with the CFE treaty. That's completely illegal. And in theory, they might completely pull the plug on the treaty as late as August of this year. They have that option under the treaty.
Mark, speaking of this dangerous behavior, very quickly, what should we make? What should President Trump most especially make of the fact that the Russians have apparently resumed their practice of provocative bomber runs against Alaskan airspace and our air defense identification zone up there?
Well, it's actually worse than what you said. I think this is a record. For the last 2 days, they've flown their nuclear-capable bombers into the Alaska air defense identification zone. They've been doing this for years, but never, as far as I can remember, back-to-back flights. And the purpose of these is nuclear intimidation. They serve really no other purpose. This is not the way you would launch a real nuclear attack against the United States. It's just designed to make their presence felt and force us to intercept their aircraft. The same thing has been going on for years, and including within the last month with NATO Europe. And all of these come back to a basic Putin perception, which is nuclear weapons are the core of their power. he believes, and the government believes, and the Moscow establishment all believe, that brandishing nuclear weapons, rattling the missiles, enhances their power. They do it literally all the time. And the problem is it may get out of hand at some point.
Mark Schneider, nobody keeps track of these things better than you. It's a privilege to have the chance to talk with you. I welcome it and look forward to doing so again soon. In the meantime, I know you'll keep up the great work you do at the National Institute for Public Policy. And stay well, my friend. Good to talk with you. Next up, we will be speaking with Dr. Harold Rode.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're joined by Dr. Harold Rode. He is one of our go-to guys on matters involving the Middle East, the subject in which he is deeply expert, having served, among other things, as a senior and very highly regarded official in the Defense Department for decades, with responsibility, among other things, for the Turkey desk. And one of the reasons we wanted him on was to help us understand what has just happened in Turkey, what has been happening there, for that matter, and where we go from here. Dr. Rode, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Frank. Thank you.
So we had a referendum vote taken last weekend. It came out narrowly, but nonetheless came out in favor of the plan that Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, has been espousing. Tell us what that means in the near term, and particularly what it might portend for Turkey's future relationship with the United States.
Well, Erdogan, since he became prime minister, and actually before, that's in 2002, has had one goal, the re-Islamification of the political system of Turkey. He found ways to lie, to obfuscate to us, and we chose to believe that he wasn't doing this. But if you look back, he's done everything that he said he was going to do. You must admire his cunning. He wants to re-establish, basically, eventually, the Sunni caliphate, that is the rule of the entire Muslim world from Istanbul, which was the capital of the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire's goal was to promote Sunnism throughout Sunni Islam throughout the entire world. Now, for him and for most people in the Middle East, truth is a malleable commodity. He would say whatever he wanted to disarm us. And we can't imagine people who are prepared to lie to us right in looking at us in the face and puts us on the defenses. Oh, my God, what did we do wrong? The fact of the matter is that this is his goal. The ramifications for the United States should be obvious, that Turkey under Erdogan is no longer a reliable ally. They lie. They tell us all sorts of things, and we choose to believe them. If I were President Trump, I would be absolutely livid. If you want the results of this referendum, the change of constitution, there are so many people in Turkey who can prove that this. There were about 2.5 million votes, which were cheats. They weren't counted right. But that doesn't matter. Erdogan can get anything he wants in Turkey. As for NATO, Turkey is no longer and a reliable ally to NATO.
Let me ask you about Donald Trump in this regard, because you are correct, I would think, Harold Rode, that he should be livid about this. And yet what happened instead was he was one of the first, if not actually the first, foreign leader to call Erdogan and congratulate him on what was at the time still a very much contested outcome in this election. It subsequently has been rubber stamped, I gather, by the institutions that Erdogan controls in Turkey. But what are we to make of that phone call and how off it seems to be?
To me, it seems rather strange. I don't understand it. We can only go into analysis and hope here. if you read Trump's book on the art of the deal, it's the, among other things, you want to keep the people on the other side off guard. Now, Secretary of State Tillerson was in Turkey, it was about a week and a half ago. Those meetings did not go well. There was an awful lot of rancorous contention. So I can't give you an answer. I just don't know, Frank. Something is wrong.
Yeah. Just to drill down for a further second, the president is supposed to be meeting with Erdogan on the margins of an upcoming NATO summit. Harold Rode, as we sit here, would you talk a little bit about what it means to continue to misperceive Turkey as a reliable ally in NATO, and what we should be doing instead at this point?
I think that when President Trump sees Erdogan, he should read him the Riot Act and say, listen, buddy, this is what our policy is. This is what we're going to do. Either you're with us or you're against us. If you are with the fundamentalists, then he is. If you are interested in having an Islamic takeover of the world, and that's what your policy basically is in Syria, good luck. We will oppose you. We will make your life very difficult. But I would read him in private the Riot Act.
There are signs, I'm told, Harold, that the United States has been moving units out of the Incirlik air base, aircraft from there to bases that are being constructed in sort of Kurdish-controlled borderlands between Iraq and Syria. Do you think that that suggests an effort to wean ourselves from the reliance that we've had on that base and the effort that that has justified to try to appease or otherwise accommodate ourselves to this increasingly harsh reality of Sharia supremacist Turkey?
Well, both among the Kurds in Syria and the Kurds in Iraq, in northern Syria and northern Iraq of today, these people are militantly pro-American. They've been begging us to establish bases in northern Iraq, the Kurds, and under President Obama, the answer was an absolute no. At the moment, we control five bases in northern Syria. One of them, we are lengthening the runway. It's a very good base. And I think it would be a wonderful idea if we basically slowly but surely wean ourselves from Incirlik, the base in southern Turkey. It's a NATO base. It's been very helpful at times, but the Turks have been over there enormous, put one obstacle in front of another for us to use that base. The Turks, if you remember, under Erdogan, would not participate in the liberation of Iraq.
Have been obstructionist in a lot of other ways as well, Harold Rode. Let me ask you to turn to this other topic, Harold. In recent days, as we discussed with Fred Flights earlier in the program, the State Department has affirmed that the Iranians are complying with this so-called nuclear deal. Yesterday, we had a very strong statement out of the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, that suggests that, maybe that's so, but on balance, there are problems with that deal. There are certainly problems with a lot of other activities coming out of Iran or made possible by Iran. Help us understand this seeming disconnect with inside the administration.
All I can only tell you is that Tillerson, after this, I think, stupid statement that Iran is complying with an agreement that no one really knows what its terms are because there's no signed agreement. Tillerson gave a marvelous, marvelous speech in which he basically blisteringly condemned Iran and said, this will not go on. What he said was after the State Department people said they were complying. So again, it's left for us to see what will happen in the future. But I want to give a general point, which includes both Turkey and Iran. The greatest professor alive on Middle East, Professor Bernard Lewis, who, God willing, will shortly be 101 years old, in the 1990s, over and over again was saying that he can imagine a time when Turkey and Iran will switch sides, that Iran will come out of its nightmare of fundamentalism and rejoin the community of nations. But Turkey will again resume its traditional role of head of the Sunni world. Sunnis are 86% of the Muslim world. That's Erdogan's goal. in the long run, for the moment, Iran is the problem. But after Iran is solved and there's a new regime in Iran, Turkey could end up being a much more formidable enemy.
Harold Rode, your insights into these matters is deeply appreciated. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.